Hello, this is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashbery. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1351 features two classic stories by Life Rattle writer Raj Pabla. Raj Pabla was born the third of four children in Toronto in 1982. The Pabla family later moved to Brampton, where Raj completed her high school before starting at the University of Toronto. She completed her first year at the downtown campus, then switched to the Mississauga campus for her subsequent 3 years, then went on to medical school. The two stories we're going to hear tonight form part of a series by Pabla about a six-week family holiday in the summer of 2002 to visit India, where the narrator's parents were born. Through her direct presentation, effective use of sensual data, and subtle humor, Pabla paints a vivid portrait of a strange yet compelling and beautiful place and the different perceptions of parents and children to the setting. Let's listen now as Raj Pabla reads her first story on Life Rattle. And please be advised that many of the stories aired on Life Rattle contain language and situations that some people may find offensive, so listener discretion is advised. And you're listening to Life Rattle from Toronto, Canada.
Crossing the Ganges by Raj Pabla. The golden sun scorched our backs as we followed the jagged stone trail snaking along the side of Hemkorn Mountain, 150 kilometers from the India-Nepal border. Clean, fresh Himalayan air filled our lungs. Minutes earlier, I had shivered as the cold mountain rain soaked through my windbreaker. The rain had turned the donkey manure into a thick slurry that ran between the stones lining the trail. I trained my eyes on the trail. I made sure to step on only the cleanest stones. The bottoms of the bamboo sticks we held onto had frayed. I probed each rock in front of me with the bamboo to make sure it would support my weight. I walked on the edge of the trail and left the cleaner, safer part for my parents. Dad's tired face matched the pale yellow of his sweater. Mom leaned on me for support. The 3-day trek to the top of the mountain had exhausted them. To my left, the Ganges, India's holiest river, pounded down the mountainside with a deafening roar. Thick maple roots clung to the mountain as if trying to avoid the wrath of the raging river below. Rainwater dripped from poplar and maple leaves, and flattened foliage sprang back to life, and the sun baked the manure onto the trail as we continued down the mountain. The sweltering heat left our mouths desperate for a drink of water. Occasionally, a Nepalese laborer carried a senior seated in a hand-woven straw basket down the mountain. Thick black straps secured the basket onto the worker's back. I watched the laborers carrying people and baggage up and down the mountain under the blazing sun. I felt sorry for them. "Gersharan, wait up," I yelled to my brother. He walked ahead of us with my cousin. People stared at us, as they always did whenever we spoke English. "What's taking you guys forever?" "Mom and Dad are tired. Slow down and give us the water bottle." When we caught up to them, Gersharan and Paji sat on boulders near the edge of the trail and took pictures. My sister Jazz yelled at them for leaving us to look after Mom and Dad ourselves. They laughed at her. We rested for a few minutes, gulped the remaining water in the 2-liter Bisleri water bottle, took some pictures of the mountainside, and continued down the path. My shoulder felt sore from carrying the video camera. My hands had blisters where I held on to the bamboo branch. I felt sticky after the rainwater had dried from my clothes. Pock marks from donkey manure covered my once white Nike socks. The blue bandana on my head reeked of sweat. 20 minutes later, we spotted the narrow suspension bridge over the Ganges. The bridge would take us to our hotel room and to Gobindghat, the temple built at the foot of the temples to accommodate tourists. Near the temple, people milling around appeared as dark smudges against the white marble slabs on which the temple stood. The orange Nishan Sahib flag flapped in the breeze and marked the entrance to the temple grounds. I tried spotting the white temple traveler van we had come in 4 days ago. Cars, vans, public carriers, and buses stood crammed in the small parking lot close, dangerously close, to the shore of the Ganges. "I'm thirsty," Jazz said. Jazz always complained about everything. "There's a drink stand by the bridge," Baji said in Punjabi. In India, I had to call my older male cousins Baji because it's respectful. In India, it's rude to address an elder by their name. We bought 6 thumbs ups, the closest soft drink to Coca-Cola. The logs we sat on served as benches underneath the shade of a sheet metal awning held up by thick wooden posts. The bridge, made of concrete slabs, had long green suspension cords running along the 2 adjacent peaks. Thin green mesh wire acted as a guardrail. 100 feet below the bridge, the Ganges crashed onto sharp boulders scattered over the length of the river. A brilliant golden red spanned the sky, resembling the intricately woven threads of a Banarsi silk sari. The bridge, wide enough for 2 people to walk beside each other, swayed from side to side with the slightest wind. Movement at one end of the bridge could be felt for the entire 60-meter length. Dad and Gishan started crossing. Mom and Jazz followed. I stopped midway on the bridge, switched the video camera into digital photo mode, and took a picture of the sun sinking between the 2 peaks. The reflection shimmered in the water at a distance. "No more snaps," Baji said. "Let's go." "Okay, I'm coming." I put the camera into its case and continued over the bridge. Everyone had almost crossed to the other side. "Oh, shit," Jazz said. "That idiot is coming over with 2 donkeys. How does he expect to cross over? He should let us get over first." "Jazz, you have such a big mouth," Mom said. "This is not Canada, okay? It is India." "Give me a break, Mom. We have nowhere to get by. The donkeys have big bags of grain on their sides, too. There's no space." The man tending to the donkeys spoke an unusual Hindi dialect. I could tell he came from Nepal. His dirty clothes hung over his skeletal figure. He coaxed the donkeys to one side of the bridge with his bamboo stick. The bells around the donkeys' necks tinkled. Mom, Dad, Jazz, and Gisharan squeezed by. The man tugged on the donkey reins to let Baji pass. I tried to squeeze by too, while the man kept the donkeys distracted. The frustrated donkeys resisted the man's pulling. In protest, the donkeys moved towards me, leaving me pressed against the green mesh. It bent under my weight, and I groped for the thin guard wire and struggled to maintain my balance, and I did not dare look below me to the rushing Ganges. I screamed. Everyone yelled at the man. 2 guys at the cold drink stand ran across the bridge to help me. I could feel the bridge sway and the guard wire bend even further. The donkey pushed harder, and my hands turned white as I held onto the bending wire even tighter. One of the guys grabbed my arm and pulled me away from the edge of the bridge. Angry and scared, I hit the Nepali man with a bamboo stick. He gave the donkeys a push to the side of the bridge again. Baji grabbed my arm and pulled me to where everyone waited for me. Tears streamed down my cheeks. I sat on a stone slab after I got over the bridge and cried. "He probably thinks we're spoiled foreigners who think they own everything," Gisharan said. "I know." I watched the man and the 2 donkeys scale the side of the mountain until the trail they took curled around the mountain and out of view. I watched the fierce river weave through the mountains. I could no longer make out the orange Nishan Sahib flag marking the top of Hemkorn Mountain, where the 2 temples I had visited earlier stood. The Gurdwara, a Sikh temple, and the Mandir, a Hindu temple, remained invisible. The bazaar below lit up as the last rays of sunlight poked through the darkening clouds. I returned the bamboo branch to the rusted steel bin for other people to use. I hopped over puddles and old newspaper scraps in the narrow, dimly lit alley and made my way back to the hotel.
That was Crossing the Ganges, written and read by Raj Pabla. Raj Pabla's next story is called Rickshaw Ride. Let's hear that one now.
Rickshaw by Raj Pabla. Jalandhar Station, the bus driver announced. My knuckles turned white from gripping the overhead bar. The hot, stale air in the crowded bus suffocated me. Mom's face had flushed from the heat. "This is our stop," Mom said to me in Punjabi. Mom always spoke Punjabi in public. People tried to overcharge us when they heard us speak English with a foreign accent. "It is about time. We have been on this bus for 2 hours." Vertical metal bars serving as doors rattled. Sweaty bodies leaned forward and the bus ground to a halt. Passengers pushed forward. The doors burst open and passengers spilt out of the bus and onto the dusty platform of Punjab's fourth largest city. The bus wheels screeched and a cloud of dust covered us. On the packed platform, a sea of people hurried between buses and the ticket booth. Rotted fruit, newspapers, plastic scraps, cigarette butts, and bus ticket receipts littered the wooden platform. Wooden carts piled high with mangoes, bananas, kiwis, papayas, coconuts, and dates lined the far edge of the platform. "Ek kilo das rupaya," vendors called out to passersby. The vendors squatted in the shade of their carts. Fruit stains spotted the white dhotis they wore to cover their legs. Their bare backs glistened with sweat. "Let's get some mangoes before we go," Mom said. "In India, you have to give something sweet to the people you're visiting." "Whatever, Mom, I already know." We plowed through the crowd to the vendors. The strong, sweet smell of fresh fruit floated in the air. "Ek kilo das rupaya," the vendors chanted. We stopped at a mango cart. Old wooden posts held up the cart. Green and yellow and red mangoes piled high into a pyramid. Flies buzzed around an overripe mango squashed on the ground. "How much?" Mom asked the vendor. I stayed quiet. People always knew we came from Canada whenever I spoke Punjabi. "Ek kilo das rupaya," the vendor said. Mom pinched the mangoes. "They are too soft," Mom said to the vendor. "I will not pay 10 rupees per kilo." "They are not too ripe, madam. They are perfect and very sweet." "I want 5 kilos. I will give 35 rupees. That's it." Mom picked out yellow and red mangoes and handed them to the vendor. The vendor placed them into a gray plastic bag and set the bag onto a weighing pan. He put a black 5-kilogram mass on the other pan and the scale teetered. He put another mango into the bag and the scale balanced. I picked up the bag, wrapped the handles around my fingers, and let the bag unwind. Mom pulled out 3 crumpled 10s and a crumpled 5 and put them into the vendor's outstretched hand. We left. "Ek kilo das rupaya," the vendor's chant faded behind us. At the end of the fruit market, rickshaws crammed together into a small lot. Some bony, dark-skinned rickshaw drivers lay across their tattered seats under the radiant midday sun. Some called out to women and the elderly and promised cheap prices for the rickshaw services. "We will have to take a rickshaw to their house. In big cities, tempo taxis and buses don't go into residential areas," Mom said. "Good. I don't want to walk in the sun anyway." I searched a lot for the cleanest rickshaw. We walked up to a rickshaw with a clean orange plastic seat. The rickshaw driver sat up. "Where are you going?" he asked. A trace of Hindi crept into his Punjabi. 6 blocks down from Chora Bazaar, near the old temple. "Hanji, I know where that is. I will charge 5 rupees. "There are just the two of us," Mom said to the rickshaw man. Mom's Punjabi became harsh. "You should charge only 3 rupees. Don't try robbing me. Okay, madam, 3 rupees. I stepped onto the rusted metal stair and sat down on the seat covered in orange plastic. Mom sat on the seat and wedged her purse between us. We pulled away from the lot and onto the busy street. Cars honked and mopeds and motorbikes sputtered. Buses and public carriers zoomed past us and left a dense sandy fog behind them. Pedestrians bolted across the street during breaks in traffic. The rickshaw bumped into and out of potholes. Mom and I bounced up and down on the seat. The sides of the seat wobbled and bent. I grabbed onto the bending armrest. A 2-meter stretch of unpaved walkway framed both sides of the road. Cobblers and vegetable vendors sat on old potato sacks and promised good rates to passers-by. Dust from the road covered their darkened faces. Shops selling kulfi, ice cream, and cold drinks brimmed with customers. Merchants in small shops pulled out bolts of colorful silk, poplin, velvet, satin, and chiffon to show their customers. The customers fanned themselves with newspapers. The sun scorched my neck, face, and arms. I wrapped myself with my dupatta, the head covering I normally wore around my neck, to keep the sun off my bare skin. I had already tanned too much. The rickshaw jolted. A man sitting on a cart towed by 2 white bulls sipped from a straw stuck into a coconut shell. The bells around the bulls' necks jingled, and the hay on the cart jostled from side to side when the wheels rolled over potholes. Angry horns honked, and motorbikes and mopeds crossed the yellow line into the oncoming traffic lane to pass the man. A bus driver behind the man blew the horn. People seated on the top of the bus peered below to see the reason for the holdup. The bus swerved into our lane. Our rickshaw driver spun the rickshaw off the road and onto the unpaved side. The wheels clanked as they rolled off the pavement and onto the dirt path. I gripped the broken armrest. It buckled under my weight. I fell off the rickshaw seat and landed underneath the rusted wheel of the rickshaw. The wheel rolled onto my back, teetered on top of me, and then rolled off. The bus zoomed by 2 feet away from my head and left me under a blanket of dust. Grains of sand stung my eyes. A crowd swamped us. Someone pulled me to my feet. Mom stood on the other side of the rickshaw, and 4 men held on to the rickshaw driver. "Are, are you crazy, bhai?" one man yelled at the driver. "You could have killed somebody. Take him to the police station," someone in the crowd yelled. Everyone feared the police station in India. Police held people in jail without reason. "Let him go," Mom said. "We are all right. It was the bus driver's fault anyway. Sister, you don't know. These people are crooks. They will take your money and leave you on the road," another man said. "We are all right. You can let him go." The 4 men shoved the rickshaw driver aside. The crowd dispersed and filled the clothing and kulfi shops. I dusted my clothes off and examined my elbows. My broken sunglasses lay in the middle of the road. The rickshaw driver wiped the sweat from his dark face with a dirty handkerchief. He straightened the rickshaw wheels, and Mom and I climbed onto the orange seat. He pushed the front handles and let the rickshaw wheels roll for a short distance before swinging his leg over the seat. The driver pedaled, shifting his weight from side to side as the rickshaw rolled onto the pavement. Sweat rolled down his back. We turned left onto a brick road. The driver turned slowly. Bare-chested children wearing tattered shorts waved and ran behind our rickshaw. Dirty dogs sank into the murky filth in the open sewer at the edge of the road. Their thin coats hugged their ribs, and their pleading eyes followed us. The wheels clanked over the ricks jutting from the road. "Okay, okay, stop right here. This is the place," Mom said. "Okay, madam." Mom handed the man 3 rupees. "No, madam, I cannot take from you. You saved me today." The rickshaw driver turned his face and wiped his eyes. He spun the rickshaw around and pedaled away. A middle-aged lady, my cousin, emerged from behind a rusted steel gate. Her eyes lit up and she stepped out onto the brick road to greet us. "We brought mangoes for you guys," I said. I handed her the plastic bag. "Thank you." The skin around her eyes wrinkled as she smiled. "Come in, come in." I hobbled through the gate. Pain shot up my back and down my legs. My elbows and ankles bled.
That was Raj Pabla reading her story, Rickshaw Ride. That concludes Life Rattle number 1351. Arnie Ackman recorded Raj Pabla reading her stories. My name is Virginia Ashbery. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman.